Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I am joined by my good friend, veteran trial lawyer Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hey, how are you? I like the way you use the word veteran instead of old. I appreciate that.
Right. Now, I have to ask you a completely off-topic question.
Sure.
I know that you live in L.A. How is Carmageddon 2 going?
Oh, it's so much fun. The best part of Carmageddon, and I'm not sure you saw this, is that, you know, last time we had a lot of problems with people getting on the freeway, and they were determined to stop them. So early this morning, they caught a bunch of rollerbladers going down the 405 freeway. I mean, you know, when my son was young and was into skateboarding, wild horses could not have kept him off that freeway in skateboarding. And I just find it humorous that people who are, you know, have the different things they enjoy, like in this case, skating, can find so much joy in breaking the law. They got cited. It's really just a ticket for being a pedestrian on the freeway, but it brings, I think, a lot of humor to it. Peter, can you imagine the rollerblading down that that highway?
Oh, yeah, that's a cheap date here in Southern California.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
Okay.
Other than that, it's doing great. Everybody, you know, we're used to chaos in this city, and everybody just finds a way around. And guess what? We go, guess what, honey? We can't go shopping with you. We have to watch football because it's Carmageddon. So every guy I know is using that to buy a bunch of chips and sit home and watch college football. And anyone who watched yesterday's 70-63 game with West Virginia certainly got their rewards, because that was got to be one of the all-time funniest games I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, so Manny, you've mentioned Peter. Would you like to introduce him and our other guest? And I use that term advisedly.
Well, Peter needs no introduction. This is Peter Haven, intrepid lawyer and L.A. litigator who's famous for going after everything that O.J. Simpson ever had in his life. Peter's a hell of a lawyer, a hell of a commentator, and as everybody knows, he keeps us relatively sane, which, according to my wife, may be the most difficult job in the world. Peter, welcome.
Oh, thank you. You all keep me sane. It's great to be back. Thank you very much.
And also, we have sitting over here Sam Moffey, our author. Peter, I understand that Sam's working on a new book, so as part of saying hello to everybody, he should give us some indication. He wrote me a brief note about one of his characters I loved, and author, bartender, and general bon vivant, Sam Moffey. Tell us about your new book, Sam.
Well, thanks, man. That's the nicest introduction you've given me all year.
Wow, I try hard. I top myself. Wow.
Man, Peter, it's good to have you back.
Likewise, Mr. Bon Vivant.
I think I've started something.
Oh, God, they're going to have a love fest.
this could be, we're getting in gay territory now, so behave yourself.
Okay, so I vote we switched tracks to Votageddon. that's gonna happen November 6th, I believe. Manny, I know that you watch the events, I won't say closely, but you certainly keep your eye on it. What do you make of last week?
Oh, you mean talking about this a bit with that right now the Republican Party is suffering a little bit with these little voter problems? I mean, the last election, the Democrats were accused of playing around with the vote. Now it's the Republicans who throughout this country have tried to limit the number of people registered, how they're registered, who is registered, because sometimes that's a better strategy than it is going out and discussing the real true facts of the election. So while I'm not going to accuse Romney of it, certainly everyone else in the party is seizing every opportunity they can to really get into these different areas. And I think it's despicable, personally. Anyone feel differently?
Oh, okay. I'm going to pick on Peter.
I don't feel any differently. I just think it's political warfare and all's fair in love and war, and it's probably a sign of desperation. I kind of wonder if the battleground isn't shifting more to Congress than the presidential elections at this point. But you know, maybe we're premature in that regard.
Well,
yeah,
I think that's the next place, don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
Right, but I mean, Peter, if you look back in history, there have been various attempts to temper the votes from certain areas. I mean, this doesn't seem to be any different.
No, I
temper?
Don't think so.
Peter,
yeah.
The use of the word temper here by our distinguished co-host, I don't think that's real. The word manipulate, control, limit, undercut your opposition, and I don't care which party does it, they're both inappropriate, but that's what it is. In our business as lawyers, there's always a plan B or an alternate strategy. And, Sam, I consider this an alternate strategy. Now, you're a libertarian, and I know what your views are in this election. Does it bother you that the Republicans are doing this, or are you more lenient on your side of the fence?
Oh, no, I think it's I think it's despicable that it's been going on ever since people voted. You know, way back when, people gave – I mean, when Davy Crockett ran for Congress, they gave up. They paid people to vote for him. And I remember, a bit or two bits, and if the other guy gave you three bits, you voted for him. I mean, then there was, we had the Jim Crow laws and all those other things that have happened. Both parties, all the parties are guilty of it. It's despicable. It's disgusting. The one thing I don't understand is why, like in Ohio, it was a huge fight here, and it was decided by the Supreme Court the Justice Department that you don't have to show a driver's a photo ID to vote. And I can't believe that because I have to show a photo ID to go travel somewhere. I have to show a photo ID if I go up to Canada or Mexico or any of those other places, to cast a check, to get into a bar, or to be served, whatever. Why shouldn't I have to, or anybody else, have not show a valid picture ID to vote? And that's the one I'd have a real difficult time in dealing with. Yet some states it's okay and there's no problem. Other states it's like Ohio, because it's a battleground state, and the Democrats are going, you know, hopping mad because they don't think that people should have to have picture IDs to vote. And 4 years ago, all the rules, there was a lot of people in Ohio, especially in the inner cities, who voted 2-3 times, they say, and the fraud was all dropped. So what do you guys think about a picture ID to vote?
All right. I have no problem with that requirement. The argument that's being put forward is that the people that are being disadvantaged are old. They probably don't drive, so they don't have a driver's license. Should there be a move to give everyone a free photo ID?
I agree. And by the way, Sam, I oppose this law for only one reason. It was to take effect immediately. I think the law should be passed and should be national, but it should take effect at the next election. That way, everybody in this country, has the opportunity to obtain that regardless of age or other circumstances, and it should be free, especially since it's attached to voting. by then, there are no excuses on either side. You have it, you don't have it, I don't want to hear about it anymore, and either we're able to pull it off as a country, or guess what, these people don't vote. But to suddenly launch it for the sole purpose of affecting an individual election, now that offends me on either side. Peter, what's your analysis as a lawyer?
Well, I think it would be nice if we had some way of properly ensuring that whoever was voting was the person who was really voting and that they only had one vote. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to ensure that. You know, every time we come up with some measure of electoral reform, the concern is that we're going to be alienating people, we're going to be excluding people somehow. You know, I'm just trying to think of how we would affect such a thing. You know, I guess photo IDs seem to be the most, the most popular, but I'm wondering if it would be something like a coupon or a voucher or some sort of voting document that you received. And all I can see now are various types of counterfeiting and various types of, chicanery with the system. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm just saying it's probably not as simple as we'd like to believe that it is. As a general rule, though, I would like to see something that could be done to prevent or limit all this chicanery, but I think it's just going to manifest in another form. That's what I suspect will happen.
Well, that's always been my position. Let's go to the heart of this. Why does this occur? Because it's part of human nature, right? I mean, the same human nature that drives people to be thieves, for example.
Sure.
It's just who they are.
I mean, I do not doubt that there's someone voting, early voting started in Ohio yesterday, Saturday. I have no doubt that someone probably hasn't voted four times already. Early voting, absentee ballot, will vote again at the polls, the day of the polls, or at least three times. Yeah, it's maddening, and it's terrible, and the fraud that's going to be out there. I mean, right now it appears it's going to be an Obama victory. Okay, it does appear to be that way. Can you imagine the screaming that will be done if Romney pulled this out with the screaming about fraud? I mean, where they're going to find it, I don't know. But they'll come up with something.
Yeah.
And,
the losers always either want to complain about fraud or they want to go 2 out of 3. You know how that goes, right? Just like the schoolyard, Sam, right?
2 out of 3, right? Wouldn't that be great? I was never good at math. Okay.
Yeah, well, let me give you, Peter, you'll love this story. I was a young lawyer, and I had a group of friends who were very well-known Century City superstar lawyers, one I clerked for and at the Ford Foundation. And as the law firm fell apart, and I knew all the partners, and I really didn't understand why. And I asked one of them, what went wrong? And one of them turned to me kind of sarcastically and said, well, it started at the beginning. I said, what do you mean it started at the beginning? He said, well, we were trying to pick names for the law firm, so we decided to flip a coin. We flipped a coin, and the order came out the way it is right now. I said, so? And he says, well, one of the partners looked at us and said, okay, let's go 2 out of 3. He said, I should have known right then the law firm was going to fail.
Yeah. Can't agree on a name. That's usually the first sign of trouble.
Yeah, isn't that always?
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought you would find some humor in that because that's so unique to the egos of professions. I can't even imagine how bad it is among doctors.
Sam, I want to get back to you.
Okay.
There has to be a reliable way for people to walk in and identify themselves.
I agree. I totally agree. I just, I've never realized that when I voted in the past, I walked in, I had my little priestess would mail you the Board of Elections would mail you a little card. You took your card to the precinct where you were supposed to vote, and you voted. You signed your name. They checked it out. They asked for an ID, and that was it. And I always thought that's the way it was done everywhere. And maybe it was when I was younger, and maybe the elections were a little bit more honest then. I don't know. But they certainly come across as not being very honest nowadays. Both parties are all screaming about fraud and then trying to outmaneuver the other one, like the Republicans are trying to get what the Democrats are doing to battle the fraud, and the Democrats are trying to be one step ahead of the Republicans, and no one's paying attention to the issues. And that's a scary thing with regard to that, that the fraud is the biggest issue. We would think that both parties would want fraud-free elections in this country.
It's funny. Let me offer you a thought. I have never spent any time with John Perry where John Perry didn't remind me of his belief that Joe Kennedy fixed the election and got Jack Kennedy elected. He believes this to this day. And it was when I was growing up during that time, it was a constant piece of gossip that Lyndon Baines Johnson had won his first election with voters that were basically taken off of gravestones. And no one ever, I mean, I didn't even always know whether that was an urban legend or really true, but I heard stories about that stuff from my early youth. And so I don't think there's ever been a time without some indication of problem of voter fraud. But I always say to John, it doesn't matter because Nixon had his opportunity to mess up the country later anyway.
Right, and I think you said this before, Manny, to Nixon's credit, I think there was real actual evidence that pointed to Chicago shenanigans, and he didn't do anything about it because he thought it was in the best interest of the country not to.
Right.
I think I've read some stuff by very capable journalists and whatnot, and you brought that up. There was another one, I can't remember, I think it was Samuel J. Tilden from the turn of the 19th century, who was a senator from New York. And I think he lost to Chester Allen Arthur, if I'm not mistaken. Please don't quote me on this.
But I think you're right, sir.
The fraud was blatant, and Tilden didn't do it. You know, he too fell on the sword, so to speak, and decided not to challenge everything, even though it was blatant. Does everybody remember the movie The Gangs of New York?
Sure.
Do you remember when they were shaving people's mustache and beards to get them to vote for sheriff of a constable of a guy would walk in, he'd vote with his long mustache, and then he would run back down to the barber, and they'd shave his mustache off, change his hat, and he'd go back in line and vote again. Tammany Hall. And so I guess you're right. I guess it probably happened forever and ever, and it's too bad. I would think, like, in our country where people have died, I mean, how many millions have died defending freedom, how important the right to vote is, that you would think the powers that be would say, this has got to stop, it's going to stop, we're going to have honest elections at every level.
Do you know where that story came from, what motivated him? Because I happened to catch a brief interview with them. Does anybody here know Norm Van Leer was?
No.
Van Leer was a well-known basketball player. He and Jerry Sloan were the starting guards for the Chicago Bulls in the 60s, one of the great players in the 70s. And they were, I forget the game, it was a very important game. Van Leer was thrown out because he was, as usual, totally out of control, cursing the referees and, you know, the usual things to get guys thrown out of games. So he was so upset at halftime, he shaved his full beard, changed uniforms, came out as a different player, and tried to play, but he got caught.
Okay.
That's part basketball folklore. Go ahead.
That's
guys.
A great story.
All right. Sam, I have to ask you. We're in agreement that people should have to identify themselves to vote. I think that's a great concept. Should the vote come at a cost? Should a perfectly legal person have to face a cost to get the ID required to cast the vote? Because the way I read it, you know, the Constitution, that's not really the way they designed it.
Well, it'd be a poll tax.
It'd be a poll tax. Yeah, so I agree with Manny. You can't do that. Because some people couldn't afford that. Now you're really messing with stuff because there are people out there, let's say it was $5, who had to make a choice, do I eat or do I vote? Well, eating is more important to them anyway. So I would be totally against the cost. I think as a citizen, if you you know, you have a right to vote. I mean, that, you have a right not to vote, too. So some people probably won't even get, let's say it was a special vote card, the you know, and it's good for all elections, state, local, federal, and some people might not get one. There are a lot of people I know who don't vote for anything, and I'm sure you three of you gentlemen know people like that, too. And, so, and sometimes they have the biggest mouths about what's wrong in the country, too.
okay, so Sam, you're in broad agreement that it should not cost people money to vote.
I'm totally against that philosophy.
All right. And so what's with this? We need a photo ID.
Well, I think that you could it will be given. You're going to have to, when you maybe go to get your license renewed or the whatever the common denominator is somewhere around the country. Most people, we're all going to be forced to have a national ID card sooner or later. I mean, it's in the Patriot Act and all that stuff. So it's just a matter of time before we all have what we're talking about now anyway. And we may have to pay for it. It may come automatic when you get your new driver's license or your license plate renews. I don't know if they do that in Missouri and California, but every year I have to put a new little tag on my license plate in the state of Ohio and send the state $50 for, you know, for my right to have my license plate. And you know, and maybe it'll be done in that, or maybe when there's so many different ways you could do it. What would be the simplest way? I would think just by the next 4-year election, as Manny said, you know, let's have this thing done. And no one has any excuses that they forgot it, they didn't want to get it, or this or that. And what is the reason? Heck, I'd contribute a dollar on my tax return if I knew it was going to help buy a national ID for someone who wanted to vote.
Okay.
As opposed to giving money to the candidates for campaigns, I'd rather give that a dollar to whatever it is, and you can check it off for your tax returns.
Okay, and Peter, I have to ask you the same question. There's a basic right to vote, but it appears that a number of states are now demanding, photo ID, and people don't have it. Should it be free?
Well, in terms of a cost to the voter, I agree. I think it should be free. I don't think you can have a situation where we're charging the voters any cost. I'm just trying to think through, at least not direct costs. I mean, of course, the irony is at the end, the voters are paying for this anyway, one way or another. I'm just trying to, I mean, I know it's not really the question, but I'm just trying to think through logistics of how it could be done. In one sense, everyone who has a driver's license automatically has a photo on record. So it's a simple matter, I would think, of exporting that data and generating an ID card or acquiring a driver's license. I guess it's for all the people who don't have photo IDs that we're really talking about this. And then, of course, they have to go someplace and get a photo ID or submit a photo or do something like that. And then I think that's where you're going to start to have problems. And I'm just trying to think of other ways it can be done.
Could it be done by showing a social insurance card?
A social security card? Yes.
Yeah.
Except I think it could be done by that, except there's a couple problems with that. First of all, a social security card doesn't have an ID on it. Secondly, to the extent it has a signature on it, it was a signature that someone like me signed when he was like 16 years old, and my signature has drastically changed. And thirdly, I don't have my social security card anymore. I don't know where it is. I think I lost it. So, it's a good thing I memorized the number. So in theory, a social security card is a good idea. In reality, it's going to have some problems because the signature, for instance, is very easy to forge. my signature's changed drastically. I might have even used my middle initial when I signed that thing. It was probably one of the first documents I ever signed, in a formal sense. You know, so but something similar to that could work. And, you know, it seems to me this process already sort of exists. I mean, you register to vote, you receive packets of material in the mail, and then I think when I go to vote, you know, Manny, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they just, you just give them your name and they just cross off a line on the voter rolls. I forget whether or not I have to show ID. Do you remember, Manny?
No, you don't have to. But what happens, at least here in California, is certainly true in my neighborhood. One of my, you know, a neighbor, you know, is someone who handles all the elements of voting here. And 99% of the time, because it's only changed once or twice that I can think of, do I get anyone other than a neighbor who lifts up me and goes, "Hi, Manny." I go, "Hi." You know, and I vote. And
yeah.
So in most places, there's a familiarity to the people who operate the process, which may not be common in some areas. But I think in most instances, people just know where they're voting and know the people that take the vote, and there's nothing new about it. So, yeah, I think that's a factor. I want to come back to something you said, and about Social Security cards. I lost mine as a teenager when I fell in the ocean off a boat fishing, and everything in my pocket turned to seaweed. And I just, you know, I knew it by heart, so I just never bothered, you know. And I think a great many Americans in my generation followed the same path because none of us really felt the need to have one. But I want to come back to an interesting thought. First of all, if you spend any time in Manhattan, you meet just countless people with no driver's license who've never had any reason to get one and don't even think about it because they're not motivated to drive. And I always think of the movie, ever see the movie Grand Prix, the seminal movie from 1966 that traces the Grand Prix circuit around Europe and all the racing? Well, one of the stars, Brian Bradford, was hired for the film. Shockingly, Frankenheimer found out after he hired him that he never drove because he grew up in New York City and never had any reason to drive. So here was this guy who was suddenly thrust in driving Grand Prix cars at 200 miles an hour, actually less. They slowed down to him into the 170s and 180s, so he had to learn to drive as he went along. You know, on behalf of most speeders, I got to tell you, that's insane. To suddenly go from no driving to 200 to 100 mile an hour cars is pretty wacky, don't you agree?
Yes.
So when you get to places like New York City, you're going to have no trouble finding just a legion of people who've never driven before. That's a problem.
Well, there will be a national ID. There is a national ID card coming. I think we all see that. I mean, like I said, it was in the Patriot Act. We've had a. I've seen all sorts of, as a bar owner because of you know, with the IDs that we have to do.
Right.
I've seen military cards, different licenses. I've seen lots of different picture IDs from all over the world, not you know and whatnot. So it's not. And some of the people, there was some people from Rome out here, believe it or not, Manny, looking to buy up with all the fracking land around here to grab. All the natural gas that's under here. We've had a lot of people from Europe around here buying up land to get to sell the mineral rights. But so I met some people from Rome, and they didn't have licenses, but they had besides their passport, they had some, I forget what it was. They had a picture ID, though, so what their age was. So in Europe, I think you have to carry, isn't there, I'm not mistaken, I think with the Euro and the Union, I think they have a picture ID cards in Europe, not just licenses.
Well, I think that Europe's a little different. Europe's, you know, countries are like states here in terms of geographical separation. So anyone who's spending time in Europe finds you don't have to go, you can't go very far without needing your passport, right, Simon?
You can drift all around Europe without a passport, but I would highly recommend that you do carry one.
So maybe that's what we'll have to get, a voting passport or whatever.
Really? Simon, you've been able to drift all around Europe without one. I've crossed borders in cars, all sorts of things. I have never crossed a border anywhere in Europe without somebody asking me for my, you know, what do you call it, passport. Really, never. I'm surprised.
Oh, well, no. How long ago was it?
Since I've done that kind of driving, probably the late 90s. For my cancer surgery. I haven't driven around Europe in a long time. Lately, it's by airplane, and of course, anywhere you go by airplane, you absolutely have to have your passport.
Right. and a fresh change of shoes, because they'll ask you to take them off.
Yeah, well, I saw that long ago. Peter and I are veterans of the federal court. And when you're going out of the federal court, they have probably the most restrictive metal detectors I've ever seen in my life. So I went out and started buying these rubber-based shoes that were probably the cheapest shoes I've ever owned in my life, just so I could get through that metal detector without, carrying an extra pair of shoes or taking them off. Peter, did you ever try that type of approach to circumvent it?
Yeah, I usually have a pair of, they're pretty good-looking slip-on casual loafers, because that's what you need. The thing that people don't appreciate is when you go into federal court and many state courts, they make you take off your belt.
Oh, yes.
And you haven't seen anything until you've seen a bunch of lawyers emerge from beyond the airport security all fumbling to keep their pants up. It's a sight you don't want to see anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely an experience.
Do you guys have as Rhonda's voting, what do you guys think about early voting?
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. But I have to put you on hold. Someone's banging on my fucking door.
I hope it's
we'll
not the.
We'll just take over the show and you take care of the door.
It's the DA.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. What I don't like about early voting. Is first of all, it caters to the wealthy who want to go on vacation, and that's okay. But at the same time, for you, what I describe it as early voting, late counting. And I think everybody will agree that that is what happens most of the time. You hear them say, well, we're waiting for the returns from the absentee voters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in some instances, in very tight elections, it actually creates a delay and a problem. Has anyone else noticed that too?
Well, that was obviously the most noticeable thing that happened in Florida when we had the there.
I fixed the door problem, by the way.
I didn't hear any gunshots.
Now we'd be grateful if you could fix the electoral problem that we're working on.
Right.
Yes, isn't that what the show's on, fixing?
Funny. I don't like the early voting because I am seeing trucks go, what was yesterday? The 29th of September, and the election's supposed to be the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And I always had a problem with absentee voting because I said, hey, these people, you should have to. It's your right. You have to get off your ass and go vote on that the voting day. And those that don't, and those that do, will. But now we've got people. I've got buses. I call it the clown bus. It's the Democratic Party bus locally. It's got sound speakers on it, just like the old days. They're driving around in the ghetto, and they're screaming, come on, register to vote, and then we're going to drive you to the voting booth. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, if those people, if that's what you have to do to get someone to vote, that person shouldn't be voting.
Well,
I'm sure the Republicans are doing just as crazy things too. We don't have that many. We don't have a Republican Party in Mahoney County, so we don't know that. But I mean, I just think, what won't they do to drag someone to the voting booth? It's disheartening to me.
All right, Sam, you bring up a great question. I can understand how members of the military, obviously can't attend on the day, of voting because they're in far-flung places. But what is this crap about, we can start voting right now? I mean, it's stupidity. Who are they appealing to?
I agree with you. And by the way, your point about the military is well taken. They should be able to vote obviously, I think, military provision. I think they call it provisional ballot, if that's the proper word. But, yes, they have to be able to, the votes have to count, no question about it. But what I said is it's in here in Mahoning County, the most, we call it the People's Republic of Mahoning County. It is, you've got the clown bus going around getting people out of the projects to vote early. I mean, we're talking Saturday and Sunday. They're doing it today.
I don't find anything wrong with that compared to the other conduct we're discussing. At least that's, you know, kind of forthright and direct based, because that occurred even like in the 1800s.
I mean, people can't even read and write. I mean, it's as bad as Republicans dragging them out of the nursing home to do the same thing. I mean, that's how low we sank as a society.
That may not be true. Those people may have opinions, too, and unable to voice them in traditional fashions. You're starting to sound like Thomas Jefferson, who believed that only landowners should actually be allowed to vote. Not that I openly disagree with him, but in our society, that certainly would have limited the vote to the ultra-wealthy, which is sort of where he was at the time. And while he gets a great deal of credit for starting our democracy, he certainly saw that we should put some limitations on the manner in which our democracy functions.
Well, look who couldn't vote when they put this country together. I think you had to own land, right? Didn't you have to pay taxes, own land? Women couldn't vote. African Americans couldn't vote. 18-year-olds couldn't vote, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, that part of it was put in later. In the beginning, and certainly in the days of the American Revolution and afterwards, and by the way, I might point out, too, it didn't matter as much. Peter, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, it went to the electorate, and basically they elected the president of the United States, not the actual voters. So in many respects, the Congress of Electors, I've forgotten the name. What's the name of it again? Correctly, I was...
Electoral College?
Electoral College. Yeah. I spent all morning doing a project for my wife, and I'm having trouble remembering my name this afternoon. So to make a long story short, that wasn't considered the most serious problem in our country, because they never really expected voters to do anything more than to give them some indication of how they would vote when they got there. So in most cases, these weren't historical issues. Now, Peter, do you disagree with that?
No, that's right. They wrote down the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but they had very narrow views of what the people really were.
Yeah.
Well, I think the I'm glad you brought up the Electoral College, because a lot of people, I'm one of these people. I firmly believe Barack Obama is going to definitely win the popular vote, and I don't think he's going to win the Electoral College vote.
Well,
I mean, a lot of people, I'm going on a limb here. I'm predicting this, okay?
Well, why don't you wait till after the debates and Romney's finished unloading the gun at his foot, and we get some idea what's really going on with him.
I think people have, I feel that right now, I'll say that today, and I'll say that after the first debate, because no matter how well Romney does, he's going to lose within the battle of the biased media and all that sort of stuff. And if Obama seems to stumble, because that's not when he's at his best. The guy is at his best in front of a podium, speaking words that other people have written for him, like many other candidates, Republicans, Democrats, much better with a written word being scrolled in front of him than in a debate platform. I think Romney's going to surprise people and be better than expected. But it doesn't matter, because the American media is so in love with getting beating Mitt Romney, beating the Republican Party, beating libertarian ideas, that Obama's going to win even if he loses.
Well, wait a minute. First of all, I got to ask you a couple questions. You don't watch Fox TV?
I watch all news, and I'm lucky I only have one TV and one gun in the house.
Yeah, because if you watch Fox, Obama doesn't exist. In fact, one of the topics that we wanted to discuss is the fact that Fox, feeling that he is possibly losing this election, has decided to show the anti-Obama, film that's showing in theaters Sunday night in an effort to affect the election, which certainly raises further questions, if there were any, about their neutrality in election year.
I don't think there's any neutrality on Fox. I don't think there's any neutrality on Rush Limbaugh. Then again, there's no neutrality on MSNBC. There's none on ABC, CBS, NBC. CNN used to be, I always used to think, my wife and I, that it was the most common sense of all the networks when it came to getting news. They've jumped on the Obama bandwagon. They're not as unbiased as they used to be, and that's the
way it
is.
I agree, but you know something? It also depends on who you listen to. Like, sometimes I turn on the TV and Soledad O'Brien's on. It just makes me want to throw up. She's just so one-sided, it's embarrassing. Others like Anderson Cooper do their best to try, even though when he openly disagrees, he labels it as his disagreement. But by and large, what's happened is Fox has sort of forced other people to assume positions. You know, in other words, people who would like to be objective watch Fox long enough and feel they can't be neutral anymore in light of what they're seeing on Fox.
But I've watched Fox lately. Now, I'm not a big Fox watcher, but I've watched them. They bring in the other side. I've seen James Carville on O'Reilly's show. I don't see, you go to MSNBC, all they have are repeaters. Chris Matthews or Rachel Maddow will have, they won't have anybody who disagrees with them on. They have people who do nothing but bang the drum for the socialist policies. They never have anybody. CNN used to, they've kind of switched. I mean, I will give Fox credit. I see blatant, you know, partisan Democrats on Fox once in a while. I never see partisan Republicans on CNN or MSNBC or any of the other stations. We watch them all.
Oh, come on. I see Mary Madeline, who's about as partisan as they get, and a whole variety of other people.
On CNN I see her once in a while.
Yeah,
but
CNN. That's what I'm talking about. And if you're saying to me that CNBC is so liberal, CNBC, you know, is basically, you know, when you look at it, is a coordination of Microsoft and NBC, and neither one of them are known for being particularly liberal, are they?
Well, wait a minute. General Electric? Now you're going to get going. That guy's the biggest Obama supporter in the country. So you know how much money they're making on the electric plug-ins? How much tax breaks General Electric has gotten? Oh, come on, Manny.
Oh, yeah.
He makes the guy Philander look like a pauper with the tax breaks General Electric's gotten from the Obama administration.
Well,
allegedly to build plug-in stations for the Volt that cost $800 million to build, which our tax dollars are paying for, and it's a loser of a proposition.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you a word of warning here. Sam, I think you're going to get whacked. I'm Manny.
No, not really. I listen to this from John all the time, and I happen to openly disagree with both of you. The only time they ever support the Democrats is when their political contributions give them what they want, which goes back to our long-running theme that large corporations are running America. I deal with those people, and I got to tell you, they are as right-wing conservative as you can find. But guess what? They love anybody who does what they want, and they twist and turn government, you know, like a hot pretzel. And that's the only reason why they have any Democratic position at all. But when you talk to these people, they just can't stand the Democratic position. But ask them where their wallets are, and, God, they'd turn on their mothers, wouldn't they?
Okay, so I agree. We all agree on that point. But that's, I think, one reason why GE is getting, you know, gazillions in tax breaks from the Obama administration, and it's aptly pun intended green energy policy, and I mean, you know what I mean by green, I mean money green for certain people, and they've been great beneficiaries of it. Now, if that guy is a radical right-winger when he's at the dinner table, I'd be surprised, but I defer to you because you have more experience.
No, I'm not saying they're radical right-wingers. I'm saying that these guys only vote what's good for their pocketbook, and no matter what their personal feelings are, they leave them at the door when they come into work because it's about money, plain and simple, with them. And when you deal with them, they're more concerned with the money issue and politics is something that gets in their way. And okay, they remind their employees constantly about that.
Oh, I agree. So we'll take it when we take it further, you know, and it'd be that because General Electric was pushing the electric cars and the electric this and that, and that's what the Obama administration was very keen on and been trying to shove down our throats. That's why their shareholders benefit from General Electric, NBC, and MSNBC helping them.
Right.
Because the Republican Party, under Bush, it was oil. So GE was on the outside looking in. Was that basically what you're saying?
Yeah. I know you're not arguing with me because you understand that point clearly. And that, again, underscores what we all discuss is the major problem in our country. Our country is driven by what benefits major corporations and what's in their best interest. And their decisions from a voting standpoint are made based upon who's going to support whatever they want. So they got shut out under Bush, and their position is they don't want to get shut out under Obama. Okay, I understand that. But that's
okay. How about Monsanto? Where do they put their dollars?
Well, you know, one of the problems with Monsanto, Simon, as you know, is they're in an actual partnership with the U.S. government. And they put their dollars in whoever's going to allow them to do what they want. But let's talk about that for a moment, about voting and all the rest. How about Microsoft? You listen to Bill Gates do this I'm feeding the world routine, which I find offensive because we have Americans who could use this kind of aid. But why is he doing this? Because he's bought large chunks of shares in the corporation Monsanto and is out preaching their version of the world, which is to provide the world with genetically modified wheat, foods, and other things. So why is this important to them? Because that's what they sell. So here we have, you know, Bill Gates, under the guise of being a humanitarian, actually pushing his own personal financial goal, which is to benefit by the sale of products made by a company who's he's investing with. So this sense of duplicity among American leaders is what drives the table, literally, Sam, and that's where I see as a problem. So you can castigate the Democrats, as I do too, by the way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've learned a lot from, you know, about the you know, from what you've listening to you and what you've been saying, and then applying it to do a little research on my own and say, oh wow, you know, this is ridiculous. It's almost like they all they have their meetings like the mafia used to meet in Appalachia. Well, where did they meet and have that big in New York, Manny?
No, where they? Oh, you're talking about the old Appalachian meetings.
Yeah, the Appalachian.
They used to show up and photograph all the cars. They depicted that in The Godfather, I thought.
Yeah, and they carve up the illegal booty. Well, maybe it's in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, when the Fed has their annual meeting, while the super wealthy get there and they carve up the United States taxpayers, and you guys take this side, you guys take that side, and we'll just laugh all the way to the bank. And as P.T. Barnum said, right, there's a sucker born every minute, and it's named the American taxpayer.
You know, oddly enough, I have some insight into those because I've had clients who attended them regularly and discussed them with me, and you'd be amazed what goes on in there and how it affects our country, and that's where policies are made in this country. And sadly, it isn't going to change, and from what I've seen. So what we're going to have is a constant carving up of our country by the super wealthy, or in this case, CEOs of major corporations. And as I point out, I know a lot of these people because I've represented some, and in representing some of them, I find that all of them call each other. I'm with them sometimes on business, and the phone rings off the hook from other famous people, and they're discussing businesses, getting advice from each other. And even though they may have conflicts from time to time, they're not very often. So people who look like they're disagreeing in public aren't necessarily disagreeing behind the scenes. And that's a problem.
I agree with you. So why are we going to solve it on the with the rest of the time on the show?
We're not. I mean, we are absolutely not.
Well, we'd probably need another hour, but yeah.
Right.
No, we can come back to this theory because I know this is something that's certainly on Peter's mind. We have to have a revolution in this country that starts with the individual voter and the populace demanding change from our government. And that change would include a great many things that we're presently discussing, including altering the manner in which political contributions are made to reduce the strength and effect of these corporations and what they can do. And until we return contributions to being something other than a pawn in corporate manipulations, this country will never alter where it is now. Do you agree, Peter?
I agree, and I do feel that some sense of revolution is looming. I feel that the engine of revolution, you know, broadly defined, is going to be a crisis. And it's unclear to me exactly what the crisis is going to be, but it is going to be a crisis. And only then will the masses really galvanize and express themselves. I don't know how great an extent they'll be able to you know, create change, but I do have hope that change will happen, but it will only happen when there's some sense of crisis. And I'm sorry to say we're getting closer, and we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, I see it too. Sam, you've expressed your own viewpoints. So when we talk about revolution, we're not talking about a fiery revolution with Americans shooting at each other. We're talking about the same type of grassroots revolution that, for example, we experienced in California over a simple issue like property taxes years ago when the populace rose up and passed a popular act that froze property taxes at a certain point. So
I wish it was as simple as that it could be. Wow, something's happened. Good people get galvanized. They throw the bums out, as they say. They rewrite some policy. They level the playing field and do all those good things that all four of us live our lives by, and we want other people to do. But Peter just brought up a great word. He said the word a crisis is coming, and he feels it. I think that crisis is coming, too, and I don't have a lot of faith in my fellow man in the year 2012. I think it'll be violent. I think you can't, I forget who said it, Manny, Peter, and Simon, but someone said you can't have a revolution, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs.
Well, I agree with you, but I want to stress.
I don't want it to be. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to see that, but I think it's being forced down our throats by the very people we talked about a few seconds ago, these greedy CEOs, the politicians, the bureaucrats, the ones who think this is going to go on forever for them and their friends and their everyone else be damned. I mean, basically they have a let them eat cake type attitude, and that's all suffering from it.
Well, I want to clarify between the kind of revolution that smacks of us talking about terrorism and those acts and the kind of revolution that changes worlds. And I agree. And by the way, if that does happen, it's my personal opinion that violence will start with our government, the way it traditionally does in every society when people start squelching other people's opinions. And that's usually what leads to the violence, either that or it erupts in a manner as we from time to time experience in Los Angeles, where minorities are so disgusted with the state of the government that they just explode. So we have a tinderbox, in my opinion, here in Los Angeles that resembles the pre-O.J. Simpson period and the Watts riots times of the 1960s. I was at USC at the time of the Watts riots and actually worked in Watts. And I came home at Christmas before the Watts riots after a part-time job there. And I said to somebody, God, you know, that place was kept powder keg. You know, from everything I just studied in history, that place is going to erupt into a revolution if we're not careful. And the following year, everybody tried to burn it down. And I see elements of that now, don't you, Peter?
Yeah, I see elements of that all around us, factions dividing, wealth being divided, lots of it along the lines that you were just talking about, you know, powerful people, you know, cutting things up like cookies on a cookie sheet. And but I see it brewing in other fractures developing in other ways, you know, social issues, economic issues, political issues, world issues, terrorism. I think it's going to take a global crisis to really wake everyone up, or at least alter the way everyone thinks, because the fundamental aspect of human nature tends to be, you know, individually motivated or subset motivated, group, you know, group motivated, and I feel something's brewing that's going to alter all of that, but we're probably a few decades away from it.
Okay. Don't you feel that now?
I feel it now, but I feel as if all the forces are so equally or more or less divided that a skirmish on one end is squelched by forces on other ends. So, yes, I see sub-riots and sub-revolutions and sub-dissatisfaction, but the overall hierarchy and control systems remain relatively untouched by that.
Okay, Peter, I have to bring up the Arab Spring. It was touted as being bringing democracy to the Middle East. It's done no such thing. Do you think that, you know, we're viewing our own Arab Spring?
We are viewing our own Arab Spring, you mean here in America?
Yes.
Well, I guess so. I'm not really sure how they correlate with each other. But, you know, everyone, you know, for instance, we see all these social issues which seem to be manifesting themselves throughout our political process. We have our arguments and debates over things like gay marriage and abortion and things like that. And there are still subsects of the population that feel very strongly about these issues. And I can't help but think that there are bigger issues that we need to tackle right now. And even the bigger issues that we think we see right now, I think those issues are going to be dwarfed by future issues that we have to face. So I'm not sure how that equates with Arab Spring, but I do think that, you know, I don't think democracy is breaking down. I just think I think that it will function in a different way when everyone decides that they see a crisis that everyone agrees on. Well, that's something we all have to address first and foremost.
Okay,
I didn't understand your question.
All right, maybe I didn't choose my words carefully enough. Manny, I'm going to rephrase it and point it at you. We saw the Arab Spring, you know, people grumpy with governments, and quite honestly, I see us being grumpy with governments, and it doesn't matter, you know, if you're a Republican or a Democrat. There's something going wrong. You know, are we going to be facing our own Arab Spring?
No, I don't think we're going to be facing an Arab Spring. And also, I never believed in the Arab Spring. Every time I heard that comment, I had to choke back the laughter, because it signifies to me whoever invented that saying for the public basically was denying history, because the fact is that history is pretty well proven that what's going to happen out there, as it will with Afghanistan, is that every time you change a government in that arena, it is going to end up being the most conservative government you can imagine. So with that thought in mind, how can anybody expect this to go any other way? It's the way it's gone for 3,000, actually closer to 5,000 years. And when everybody launches in on me about Muslims and all the rest of this, I remind them that in the days of people like Persis and Darius the Great and other people before they were Muslim countries, they were still doing the same things, attacking the underbelly of Europe, trying to dominate Europe and trying to impose their will on them. So a lot of this is just who these people are, and it's not only them, but other countries. Germany can hardly restrain itself, and as a friend of mine pointed out when they were talking about unifying Germany, that in the history of the world, every time you unify Germany, guess what? We have a world war. So, you know, when you look at some of these things, you can't change human nature, and human nature is in a cycle right now, and we are repeating the past, something Sam and I talk about frequently. We are in the same area where we were, where this country was at the turn of the 1900s into the the 1800s, early 1900s, when basically we started a world war out of ego and a variety of other things during the same time of military buildup. Only in those days, the military buildup was over the size of the battleships, the dreadnoughts, and all the rest of them. And basically, Germany and England were in this constant competition that was occurring really between two cousins who just really couldn't stop competing. And in the end, they started a world war. So,
oh, okay, talking about world wars, and I'm going to switch subjects here. Wednesday, we get to see Obama and Romney face off. First presidential debate. I've been looking at the pundits, and they're all saying the same thing. Everyone's lowering the bar. Yeah, that there's a little love fest going on. Romney's a great debater. He masturbates. He did it 20 times during the primaries, so he must be good at it. Manny, how do you think that the pair of them are going to match up?
Okay. Well, let's start with Sam. I'm not going to let your teleprompter comment go by. If you have any illusions that Romney is a better debater or better speaker than Obama, I think Obama is going to prove it differently. And it's not because I'm an Obama supporter. The guy was a trial lawyer, a Harvard graduate, a debate champion, et cetera. And Romney is number two. Romney's principal weakness in this, why I think he's going to succumb, is he rides the fence. He has to appease his conservative voters while maintaining his moderate base. And I think any time anyone is speaking, and I deal this with juries and other times when I speak, where I have to be careful of one side to appease the other to get an argument across, and I know when Peter gets to his turn, he will use a similar example, it really tends to dilute what you're saying. You're better off, and by the way, that's why prosecutors sound so eloquent in criminal trials, because they only have one position. They only have one thing to say, and they can champion on it, pound on the podium, hammer it. But in the other direction, no, Sam, you can't leave. You're not going to lose. You're going to stick through this. Doing a lot of static. Are we still there?
Yeah, I'm there. I get static, though.
Yeah, so anyway, the bottom line to all this is I don't know how Romney can stick to one position and not have difficulty and satisfy everybody around him. Does anyone feel differently?
Peter, I'm going to ask you.
Hello?
Peter?
I'm here. All of a sudden, I wasn't there. Now I'm here. You guys there?
Oh, yeah. It's only in our minds, though.
I all of a sudden, I got real staticky, man. You were talking, and then you just disappeared.
I think it was Peter. But I...
His new phone
I think he's called
he needs
back
to vote
on
for
a...
Obama and get a new phone.
I think it's John Perry who has, you know, deliberately done this.
He said
Peter,
I had to talk about the phone.
Yeah, I apologize. I apologize. Something happened. I lost you, and I hope I didn't interrupt anything, but I'm back with you now. I apologize for that.
You're coming in a lot better now, Peter.
Thank you.
Yeah, so anyway, my point is that he's burdened with a split message, and anytime you're burdened with a split message, I think it is very hard to maintain your position in a debate. That's been in my experience since I was a very young lawyer, and one that bothers me always in cases where I have a somewhat potentially compromised position with a client. Peter, I was pointing out that one of the reasons that prosecutors sound so eloquent is they only have one position and they don't have to be concerned about other areas the way defense lawyers have traps and things to avoid. So generally speaking, the guy who's got the clearest position and doesn't have to be worried about being compromised traditionally finds the debates far easier than a person in another area. So I'm going to hand this to Peter and ask you, Peter, whether that's been your experience, because that's my experience as a trial lawyer.
Well, I do agree with that. I think that, generally speaking, when you have relative confidence in the position that you're advocating and it's a relatively consistent theme, then you stand a much better chance of not only persuading those who are already in your corner, but persuading those who may not be. And I think that Manny raises a number of very good points. I think that one of the burdens that Mitt Romney has to try to juggle is he has to try to bridge gaps within his own party. You know, if you could classify it as two factions, I think that's a struggle. And I think he risks alienating either one if he goes too far in either direction. And then in turn, he risks alienating the quote-unquote third faction, which is, arguably Democratic. And I think he's kind of, through no fault of his own, I think he's kind of boxed in. I think it's difficult for him to really make strong appeals to any one of these sectors. And I think, unfortunately, he's going to be hampered with some pre-debate comments that will come back to bite him a little bit. On the whole, I think he is going to do better than most people expect him to do. But I just think the task is so insurmountable for all of these reasons that even if he does well, I don't think ultimately it's going to matter much at the end of the day.
There was an interesting segment earlier today on CNN. I don't much care for CNN anymore. You know, they seem to have lost their focus. But you know, Sundays, they have a program called GPS. I think his name is Fareed Zakaria. And he had a really interesting observation. Romney is a very smart guy. But right now, he is completely handcuffed. He can't afford to talk about specifics on anything for fear of pissing off the GOP. But without specifics, he cannot sway the undecided voters. Peter, is that the way you see it as well?
I think that's part of it. I think that's definitely part of it. He has to tread lightly because I think he has to balance differing factions within his own party. And then I also think that if he delves too far into specifics, not only will he alienate some people, but he'll also run afoul of statements that he may have made in the past that will also come back to bite him. So, generally speaking, I think he's handcuffed in a lot of ways, and I don't think it's I think most of it is through no fault of his own, but it's just it's the status of the two parties right now.
Early in the year, quickly, I commented to Ash and to Simon in earlier conversations that the primaries were going to be his undoing because he was being forced to say things that really would satisfy the conservative members of his party, and ultimately they would come back to haunt him in the general election. And if he's not careful, what's going to happen is he's going to have a litany of those comments repeated throughout Democratic advertisements, because he's essentially going to be taking positions that may be against those that he advocated in order to win the nomination, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
I think if he plays the John McCain, George Bush, Republican establishment advisor, takes a page from their playbook, Obama will wipe the floor with him. If he comes out smoking, he's going to surprise people and take those handcuffs off and do the details and stand for something and show that he's got backbone and stand for some of these issues that that are important to, him, and that it then shows draws the line between him and Mr. Obama. I think Romney's going to do all right. But if he walks that tightrope like McCain did, Bush did, and the Republican establishment, D.C. crowd, you don't want to piss off anybody. They're going to call you a racist or this or that. He shouldn't even be running for president. He should just drop out right now. That's it, and just hand the baton to hand the crown to Obama for the next 4 years. I don't think you're going to see Mitt Romney at his best in the debates. Why am I saying that? Because I think I know him a little bit better from my friends in Massachusetts, Republicans and Democrats, books I've written about him. He's going to be better at on that stage Wednesday night than he has been through the primary. You guys are all bringing up wonderful points about, he took this position, he took that position. And I go back to Barack Obama. In 2008, he was the peace candidate against Hillary Clinton. Okay. Well, when he stood up against the hawk John McCain, as I recall the debate, he held his own with him about foreign policy. And here's a guy who's never been outside. He was a state senator and a senator, well, one-term senator. And all he had done, he had traveled around the world, the third world, with his mom as a little boy. And so he never really knew. But everyone expected him to talk about peace and this and bring the troops home, and he didn't. And he did much better than I thought, based upon his quote-unquote inexperience. What he had to do when he was on a debate in the primaries with 12 different candidates, one his own vice president, Joe Biden, and he did fabulous. He did fabulous in those debates, and McCain did terrible. And I thought that was a matter of fact. I can still remember when they asked Obama, If Iran gets a nuclear bomb, what was the question? McCain sounded terrible, and Obama came out with two words. It's a game changer. Of course, now he's different now that he's president, hasn't done anything according to the Israeli prime minister, but that's what he said, and people wanted to hear that. But during the primaries, he had been saying, he dodged all those questions. He was going to end all the wars to make Hillary, and he hung Hillary out to dry on that.
All right. Well, let me ask you a thought. I personally have always liked Romney. He's not my favorite, but I've always really liked him. Where I've grown to not be happy with him is that he has kowtowed to the conservatives in his party, and everything that I liked about him, he's been steadfastly abandoning.
I agree with you. I agree, and you're right. I really believe he had to do that. It's stupid to win that primary. It's sad that he had to go as far right as he did to win that primary, because he probably didn't believe in a lot. I don't believe he believes in a lot of those issues. And the same thing with Obama in 2008.
But the fact that that's the road that he took alarmed me about him, because it makes me feel that what will he do to get elected, and what's he going to do after the election? Because one of my complaints with Obama is Obama folded up his tent with the major corporations that he swore he was going to oppose, including opposing things like genetically modified foods. And in the face of their power, he basically folded up his tent and is acceded to their wishes. And my feeling is that Romney will be like every other politician that preceded him and will essentially do the same thing. That is not good.
I was shocked that Obama didn't take on the big banks and Wall Street. You talk about having the perfect storm to do so, and he didn't.
I was shocked too.
And he, matter of fact, he kowtowed to him, and as I listened to, and matter of fact, got rid of their the head of the Inspector General for TARP, Neil Barofsky, wrote a great book, I read it, who's a Democrat, who vilified him about not going after Wall Street, reining him in from going after all the fraudsters for the TARP money, not helping struggling homeowners, which he hasn't, and siding with the loan companies and the loan servicers. And that's an issue I'm shocked Romney hasn't beaten him over the head about, but he hasn't. I mean, you talk to some of the people in the media, or you listen to them, you read them, they think the housing recovery is back, because more houses are being bought. More houses are being bought at foreclosures because the prices are so cheap.
That's not the reason, really. The reason for the market change is there's kind of a behind-the-scenes agreement where what they're doing essentially is packaging. So what's happening is they're not putting any large number of properties out on the market that would affect the market. So to make the brokers and the rest of them happy, the control release of what are called REOs, real estate owned, is what's changed in the market. And the day they go away from it, the market will drop like a rock again. So,
you're talking about if they release all the foreclosed or they rev up the foreclosures. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, just putting them on the market, Sam. I mean,
they're taking a sweet time at doing it, but, you know, it's one of the things.
No, they aren't taking a sweet time doing it. They are participating in what I would describe as a controlled release to satisfy their critics, particularly within the industry. And by doing that, what they're doing is changing the flow and release of property in a way that has materially affected the price of those properties and allowed brokers to start selling better.
Okay, I understand what you said. Okay, now I get it. But you know what I was really one of the things, again, this is something I thought Obama would hit out of the park because he's supposed to be more for the Democrats, for the people and this and that, and all the people who were illegally foreclosed on, and there were millions with the robo signings and all that sort of stuff. Well, they had a settlement with all the banks, and I think you guys all know about this, and all these 50 states' attorney generals got $50 billion, some absorbent amount of money. Every state got a piece of the pie. The California AG was the last one, I believe, to sign on. I think it was a woman. She did not like the deal.
Camila Harris, and that's correct.
Yeah, because the banks were getting off any fraud they committed or their employees, they were exempt from that, so no one could go after them. Well, that's number one she was mad about, rightfully so, good for her. But number two, what I thought was shocking, is the money went to the attorney generals of every state or the general fund, whatever, and that money's never gone to any of the people who were illegally foreclosed on. They didn't get any money. The money went to the attorney generals who then dole it out to rip down these houses that no one's living in. At least that's what's happened in Ohio. Every city that had abandoned housing, some of the money's going to rip down the houses. Some are going for, none of it's going to the people who got screwed. And you would think of all the people, a president of the United States, what Obama, I thought, stood for, that would have been something he would have, said, hey, this money's going to go to, you got this money, you guys, you committed all this fraud, I'm letting you off the hook this way, but the money's going to go back to the people who you screwed, not back to state governments.
Well, no, that's not where it's going. It's going to pools to help all sorts of stupid things like, quote, awareness and whatever. And I'll add someone else, because I happen to agree with you, and this is a source of great annoyance to me as a lawyer. There's something that's called the Private Attorney General Act, something that Peter's probably very familiar with. And what that does is because they've, and this is a classic case of something that all of you advocate, let private business do it. So what they did is, since the state cannot follow every type of employment crime or whatever, they basically created this act, and if lawyers sue major corporations for abuses of employees, et cetera, that they can collect attorney's fees that would normally go to the state. But what happens is not that. What happens is along comes the decision of the case with the settlement, and guess where the money goes? It goes in the state's coffers, because the state wants this money to promulgate and publish laws and do other things to reduce their costs. So all of these employees, and I'll give you an example of like Walmart, where they settle for hundreds of thousands of dollars, basically 25% goes to lawyers, and the other 50%, or the rest 75%, goes to the state. So these employees have been wronged, never have an opportunity to see any of the money that they were wronged about because the money is not going to them. And Peter, you've seen more than your share of instances. So how do employees benefit by this litigation if none of the money ever goes to them? Could someone answer that?
Well, it's the typical problem with all forms of class action litigation, whether it's attorney general class action or private attorney general class action. The typical problem is that the real value of the money is based on multipliers. You know, you have these individuals
right.
who are harmed, and they have suffered, you know, a significant measurable harm, but it's not. Sometimes it's not enormous, and sometimes it is significant, but it's spread out amongst thousands and thousands, and sometimes even millions of people, and it generates a massive pool of potential funds. And, you know, the attorneys stake a claim to that, whether it be private attorneys or whether it be attorneys general of various states or the federal government. And then typically large pools are created for the purpose of administering the settlement to each individual affected member. And many times, as I'm sure all of you know, you get these notices in the mail. And these notices come, and people look at them, and people get rid of them, or they don't act up on them, or they don't follow through on them. And what happens with the pooled money after that, after a period of time, is, you know, it's a function of case by case. It varies, but it invariably ends up in the hands of people who aren't really affected. And the only excuse or justification that the system has for doing it this way is if we didn't have this system, we'd never be able to police these entities at all. We'd never be able to get them to change their ways. And the theory that we're trying to achieve here is we've effected a change, and they're not going to do this anymore. And, of course, they do it again 10 years later.
Oh, Peter, that was eloquent, but dodged the bullet.
Did it?
Good for you.
I'm such a good lawyer.
Right?
That's the greatest compliment I've been paid today.
No, Peter, you know, where I disagree with all of that is, and I, because I'm somewhat of an electronic obsessed guy, I get them constantly. So take the Apple, the last Apple one. Okay, the share that went to the individuals was, I think, $1.20, and for that you had to do a whole bunch of paperwork. That certainly discourages people, if not outright pisses them off. Then throw in the fact that part of the Apple settlement had to do with an aerial problem, which I experienced, where if they sold you a cover or you bought a cover, and it covered up the aerial on the iPod, iPhone, I guess it was 4G, and on my iPhone of 4G, I went out and bought one. I didn't like anyone's they offered. I bought it in the store. So when I found out it screwed it up and I applied for it because it just annoyed me, guess what? I got a letter informing me that because I did not buy it from directly from them, I didn't qualify. So
mm-hmm.
There's always these little ways to make sure that people never get their rebate money.
There you go.
So I'm sure others have experienced the same problem in their life. So some of this is a little bit of rigging, but no, my point is, and my problem, with particularly the Private Attorney General's Act, when you sue a company like Walmart, a lot of class actions, you're not really sure who the members of the class are. And Peter, as you well know, defining the class is a major issue in each instance. But when you've got a company like a Walmart where the listed employees is so completely obvious, they still suffer this ignominious decline of their money. They're just never going to see their money, period.
That's what I've learned. I mean, I fought Deutsche National Bank and the derivatives of Wall Street, the Attorney General, and then beat them. I beat the bank, you know, it was a long, involved story. I'm not going to, you know, bore everybody with it, but I learned a lot about how crooked the banks were, the Wall Street were, and all that from fighting my little house to keep it from, and we wanted to keep the house. We wanted to keep the house, and it was, not only was it a maze dealing with the bank itself, the law firm that represented the bank here in Ohio, but the worst was the loan servicer company that serviced these loans that eventually I found out when I got an email from this Neil Borofsky, the ex let's see, in the Inspector General for type under Obama and Bush was that the Gettner and Bernanke and Obama signed off that these loan services, the longer they can keep you in foreclosure, not make a deal. They don't want to make deals. The longer they can keep the ball rolling, they keep getting their fees. They keep getting their money. And the homeowners are getting diddly squat, and eventually they give up and they leave. A lot can't afford lawyers. I was lucky I could, and I did all my own research. So, you know, that helped out a lot, and I had some good friends that helped me out and found other people going through the same thing and helping them. But I was just amazed that when I found out that, wait a minute, where is the government? Where is the FBI on the fraud? Where are all these agencies that are supposed to be helping us? But I'll go back to what you've been preaching to me, Manny, what you beat me over the head with. They work for corporations.
Yeah.
They do. Even the FBI, even the local FBI didn't want to deal with it. I mean, they've known about these frauds forever, and even the Inspector General threw his hands up and left the job because he couldn't deal with all the corruption and trying to go after fraudsters and deal with people. And he had the power to do it, and he was still being stonewalled.
Yeah, I see this all the time.
Okay.
And wait a minute. I got to add one thing down to it, Simon. You may be surprised because you always criticize our dear government, Governor Jerry Brown, that he just signed this week into law, basically a law that prevents everything that you just described here. So banks and the rest of them cannot take those actions and benefit themselves and cheat other people because the state isn't going to allow it here. And yet California gets criticized all the time for passing more laws that are more restrictive than other places. But when it's happening to you, it's not restrictive, is it?
No, and good for him. And I bet you it's because of his attorney general, because she put the fight up.
Please. Kamala Harris is a political animal.
Oh, really? I don't know. I can tell you she was the one who was putting
But she did it. She had her own selfish reasons. And by the way, she's okay, but let's not lionize someone with some of her habits, okay? I mean, I don't want to spend a show talking about her weaknesses in the office, but there are plenty of them.
All right. We're running out of time. But there's an important question that I want to get your views on. Obama went on The View rather than doing presidential stuff during the UN General Assembly. I'm just wondering what you thought about that.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Sure.
I have no problem. He's the president of the United States. He can do whatever the hell he wants to do. I mean, he spoke at the UN. People know what he wants to do. I'm sure all the world leaders have his phone number and vice versa. And that's that. He wants to go on The View with his wife and try to get some more votes and do all that sort of stuff. It is a campaign, and, you know, what's the big deal?
Yeah. Okay, Manny. Was that a presidential move to go on The View and avoid Armagina Dad or whatever his name is?
Well, I don't think he avoided it. First of all, I don't know why we want to dignify the United Nations sometimes. And, you know, the older I get, the more I start to agree with conservatives that it's worthless. It was always my belief the best thing the United States could do was move that offshore and keep those people out of our country. And,
amen.
And one of the worst things we did was put it into Manhattan, which allowed a lot of these people to run loose. So the shunning the UN doesn't break my heart. What are we shunning? China and Russia, who basically make decisions based upon their financial needs, not upon peace in the world? No. Who cares about them? In fact, ignoring them and going to The View is probably a great way of letting Ahmadinejad know that we just don't give a shit about him, and we don't. And I don't really care what he says. And I found it humorous because he stood up and he stated his avowed goal. And I understand his avowed goal. His avowed goal is to create a world that is governed by other countries besides the Western powers. Okay, fine. I understand your goal. Now that you've advanced it, fuck you. Next. Because that's how I feel about it. It's not going to be done that way, and we'll blow them out of the fucking water before America will ever accept any world in which Iran or Iraq or any of these countries have a major voice in the outcome of world affairs, particularly affairs of our country. And if he really thinks that's going to go another way, then he needs to work on his bomb shelter.
That was one of the finest rants I've heard in ages.
Oh, thank you. I thought it was being out of line. But believe me, I feel very, very strongly about that. I really do.
Peter, do you have any
comments? Now, Simon, just so you know, that's real eloquence. That's what happens when you get the real deal. I view them as separate issues. You know, I'm not sure what his obligation is to appear at the UN whenever, however, or whatever. I personally don't like the idea of our president appearing on The View. I just don't personally like it. But in today's world, in today's day and age, the sad reality is it's an election year. That's an election moment, and a lot of people watch it. He probably has an obligation to his party to do something like that in an election year, even though personally I really don't like that kind of thing. I don't like seeing a president of the United States appear on a show like that while he's in office. To me, that's something you do when you're out of office. But, you know, this is the modern reality. It's an election year. We live in an incredibly socially motivated world, and social media dominate everything, and that's one of the biggest.
So you don't think the president should tweet on his way to the bathroom?
I don't like it, but unfortunately, that's what's happening. We live in a world now where Twitter is the way people disseminate press releases and the way they make their comments known to the world. And you know, I'm not a big fan of it, but it's the day. These are the times. This is the way the world speaks now. They tweet
until the next technological marvel comes along.
Right.
The author Nathaniel, what's his name, West, described it as the day of the locust.
Great book.
Yeah, that was his description of it. So, you know, once again, we're aging ourselves here with our reading habits, Sam.
That was a really good, great novel about California. I'm gonna throw you guys a curveball. To my California friends, I'm listening to this audio book called Gangster Squad, and I am back in the 1950s fighting Mickey Cohen and Jack Dragner and all those guys. What a great story.
I bet that's fun. It reminds me of my youth.
I mean, it is. And what the way it's descriptions of what the 50s in L.A. was like, it's just and the characters, of course. I mean, larger than life, the good guys and the bad guys and the corrupt ones. It's just...
I tell you what, pour yourself a drink, give me a buzz, and I can tell you without all that reading and listening.
okay, folks, I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for talking to us today. And I want to go once around the table. Manny, I'm going to start with you. What did we achieve anything?
Sure. If one person listening today found anything of interest that would cause them to read, look at this election differently, open their eyes to the plight of Americans in this society right now, then we will have achieved our goal. And basically, there's a lot of hope in our country. Things aren't going that badly, but we have an opportunity to make them go better, to change our society, to change our world, and hopefully out of this, we'll give everybody some choices. And if we provide you some choices, we feel like we've spent a very good Saturday. And thank you for listening to us.
Peter.
I'm just wondering how many people do listen to us and if the FCC is going to get on us.
Right. You don't need to worry about the FCC.
Well, I forget which one it is, but no, I think that you know, we're talking about the issues that really do affect everybody in America and, quite frankly, I think everybody in the world. And if anyone listens at all and thinks about these issues, then we've accomplished a great deal because we all need to start focusing on them. They're not going away.
Right. The FCC doesn't rule Blog Talk Radio. But
no.
I will say this, that on one occasion, one of our shows was actually used in a need to, you know, move a court case from here case.
Yes. Thank you, Jan.
Well, I tell you, I never thought I'd ever live to see the day where Manny would use the F word more than me. So that was... that was,
well, I'm just tired, and when I'm tired, I get expressive. Lawyers tend to swear a lot when they're tired, don't they, Peter?
Oh, we swear like truck drivers. We do it all the time. It's part of the vernacular.
Oh, yeah.
And so the truck drivers. Anyway, I think it's great. Where the world's changed, and Peter, you were talking about it with the social network tweeting and the president being on The View, is here we are. I'm part of four or five people every Sunday from all over the world, America. We get together, we talk. I think we handle the issues great. We get along. We're from different backgrounds and whatnot. We're accomplishing something just in doing that. And hopefully that's going to be the future to help the country and people be educated and make smarter decisions about the leaders and that are shaping our lives, that we all want to have good lives for our families and our children and our grandchildren. So keep on listening.
And Sam, I think you summed that up very well. You know, the group of us do not disagree. Well, yeah. I mean, we disagree all the time, but you know, we do it in good humor. You know, talk about it. Don't just let it fester in the corner.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, to quote somebody to end this show, keep those cards and letters coming.
Right.
Isn't that how Dean Martin ended his show for years? Keep those cards and letters coming.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Let's close this. This is Simon Barrett and Manny Barling wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.